This is the Amrens Podcast, episode 82 for Friday, April 4th, 2008.
Hey Arthur, it's Tim Cormall calling. I just thought I'd give you a call and leave a comment because, you know, I've noticed recently in a number of shows I've been listening to that a number of other podcasters would call into somebody's show and they would, like, say, okay, well, you know, it's da-da-da-da, this is that about the person who's calling the show. And then they'd mention and say, you know, well, I was listening to so-and-so's show or so-and-so's show, but they don't leave a comment for them. So what I, or leave them a voicemail. So what I thought I would do is, you know, call and leave a voicemail on the Amrens podcast line about Chef Mark's show of Remarkable Mark. And I want to just say that the videos that he's putting out in HD are just amazing, and they're just fabulous, and the trip to Alaska looks like too much fun. So anyway, I just thought I'd call and leave a message because I know Chef Mark will probably hear this on here, and rather than call and leave a voicemail that he could play on his show, I thought I'd leave you one to play on your show, because nobody ever calls my listener line. And, you know, I'm just having too much fun with it. So anyway, we love you, honey. Take care. Be careful over in New Zealand. Bye.
Hi again, everybody. My name is Arthur, and I'm a gay American now living in New Zealand. Welcome to my podcast. First of all, I'd like to thank Tim Cormall for that phone message that I began today's episode with. I actually received that a little while ago, but I just haven't had an opportunity to play it until now. If you listen to the number of podcasts as I do, you've probably heard similar messages on other podcasts, and I think it was an absolutely brilliant thing to do. So thank you for that, Tim. And I actually, I agree with you. I think that Chef Mark's videos have been amazing. Chef Mark from Remarkable Palate, Remarkably Mark, and other things. But, thanks for that, Tim. Now, today is actually 1 week since my last podcast, and I hadn't intended on waiting once again, but this has been an incredibly busy week. This is the busiest week of the month for me, and I've been so flat out that I've made a couple of errors. The first was that I was meant to be on the Archer group show this week, Archer Radio, archerradio.com, but I forgot that the U.S. had changed its clocks, so I was an hour late. So obviously that didn't happen. And I just didn't have time on Tuesday to record a podcast, and I actually haven't had time to blog even. Oh my God, not that. So I'm afraid you haven't had very much of me this week, but I think, and I say think sort of in italics, that next week will be better. I think that things are going to be returning to normal starting next week. So I've got a few things to go over today. I want to give you some updates on things, although some of that I'm going to wait until I get to the comments. But first, the big news of the day, the most important item of the day, and that is that today is Jake the Puppy's first birthday. Yes, our little boy has turned 1 year old today, and that means that he's now officially actually not a puppy anymore. He's now a grown-up dog, but I'm still going to call him Jake the Puppy. He also starts transitioning from puppy food to adult food now that he's completed his full year. I remember when I was a kid, this is a little digression, but I remember when I was a kid, they used to run, it was a Purina Puppy Chow commercials on TV, and they had that guy who, he voiced the Winnie the Pooh in the cartoons, and he was singing Puppy Chow for a full year till he's full grown. And then they eventually re-recorded with other people, but I digress. Anyway, it's been absolutely magic having Jake around. I've talked about him a bit on the podcast, I've blogged about him a bit. Probably neither one as much as he should have had, because he certainly deserves it. He is the sweetest thing I have ever had the pleasure of having in my life. He is just such a sweet-natured little dog. He is friendly. He is outgoing. He's interested in all sorts of things. He doesn't beg for food. He doesn't have an aggressive bone in his body. I've never even heard him growl in the months that we've had him. But he's just wonderful, and he's brought so much joy into our lives. Because as you might remember, of course, last year we lost our dog, Sive, and then a few months later, our cat, Curzon, we had to put him down because he had lung cancer. So last year was a bit of a dark year for us, and but Jake changed all that. He just has brightened our lives so much, and we are just so glad that we were able to bring him into our family. So today's Jake Day. Although I'm not going to be talking about him anymore today, I don't think. But anyway, now, as I said, this has been a very busy time for me. It's the busiest time of the month. And so there, and also I've been busy too with the holidays and other things going on. So there are a few things that I just haven't gotten to, like Tim's message, for instance. But another is I've been specifically asked to talk about a particular thing relating to Australia and New Zealand, and I'm going to talk about that first. And then I just have a few items from the news, go over comments, and we'll call it a day. So before I talk about the Australia-New Zealand thing, let me play a phone message for you that will sort of introduce the topic.
G'day, Arthur. This is Scott from, no, not Australia, not across the water near you. Apparently, I'm from New Zealand. Yes, that's right. Have you listened to Big Fatty's podcast? I'm a New Zealander. Evidently, when I speak, I say all my vowels wrong. Oh, I hope you'll explain just how big an insult it is to call an Australian a New Zealander. Likewise, calling a New Zealander an Aussie. Thanks. See you later.
Thanks for that, Scott. You know, I'm particularly glad for this phone message because it gives me the opportunity to talk about Big Fatty online. Big Fatty! Because everybody talks about Big Fatty, of course. That seems to be the main topic on podcasts. But in this particular incident, it wasn't a really serious thing. Big Fatty had referred to Scott as being from New Zealand, and that's what prompted the message. And Big Fatty played a voice message from Scott on his podcast, and I posted a comment telling Big Fatty he needed a world atlas. And I said in my comment, I figured, you know, everybody else talks about Big Fatty, so I might as well read the comment I put on his site. I said, calling an Aussie a New Zealander, or vice versa, is like calling someone from South Carolina a Yankee, or worse, a New Yorker, or asking a Canadian, which part of the States are you from? To help your listeners, Big Fatty's listeners, Australia is a big, dry, mostly empty country with a lot that will bite you, sting you, poison you, eat you, or just maim you. Then there's the dangerous wildlife, too. It lies to the northwest of New Zealand, which is a small, lush, green, mostly empty island, which is more laid back than Australia, a bit like California, but without the smog, valley girls, or Austrian head of state. Not all of New Zealand is really like Hobbiton, just the largest cities. Hope that helps. Now, of course, I was taking the piss out of Australia. Actually, I was probably taking the piss out of both countries, truth be known. Because as a New Zealander by way of America, I find the whole Australia-New Zealand rivalry thing a bit funny. I don't take it seriously at all, but there are plenty of people who do, especially in sports, but not exclusively in sports. There are a number of Australians who will, if a New Zealander goes to Australia, there are a number of Australians who will think nothing of telling them why New Zealand is such a bad place. That sometimes happens in New Zealand. It's probably less likely to, overall. I've certainly heard Australians made fun of here in New Zealand. I don't know that it, I've certainly never heard it done with malice. I've only heard it done in a joking way. But I certainly know that there are people who have a lot of animosity toward one country or the other. But the two countries are very different from one another. Australia is much bigger, both in terms of its physical size and its population is something like five times the size of New Zealand, or nearly five times the size. So they're very different dynamics in the two countries. And I don't know if that's where it comes from, if it comes from their different the different histories, the different paths that they took. I don't know. But I can tell you, as a semi-disinterested bystander, that if you want to offend an Australian, the quickest way to do that is to talk about their convict past. Australians get really upset when you remind them that they all started out as convicts. Now, obviously not all of them did, but it is the most offensive thing to an Australian that I've found. For a New Zealander, it's to talk about sheep, because New Zealanders are sick to death of sheep jokes. So naturally, I'm going to give you one of mine. When I arrived in New Zealand, I worked for a company that published a variety of, well, magazines is a bit too loose a term. They were actually just ad books in magazine format. But one of them was a backpacker's guide, and it was distributed at information centers and backpacker hostels and all sorts of places like that. And naturally, there weren't enough ads to fill all the time, nor enough copy to fill the space, so they needed little tiny fillers. And so I suggested that we just put in a bunch of did-you-knows about New Zealand, Things like that. New Zealand was the first country in the world to give women the right to vote, things like that. Well, I thought it would be interesting to say the number of sheep in New Zealand. Well, they were all embarrassed about that. And I worked with women, mind you. And they were all embarrassed about finding out. So I wasn't, of course, being a new arrival. So I rang up Statistics New Zealand, and I asked them the number of sheep in New Zealand. And I worked out that it was roughly 13 sheep for every human. Well, a few years passed, and the number of sheep have been declining in New Zealand because more and more sheep stations are being converted into dairy farms, unfortunately, because dairy farms are really dirty. And so it turned out that the number of sheep had dropped to something like 10 per person, for every man, woman, and child in New Zealand. And so my joke was, where are my three sheep? Who's got my extra three sheep? Which isn't funny at all, but... But the point really is that I can make fun of that, and I think it's all a big joke. But some New Zealanders get really upset about that, almost as upset as some Australians get about the whole convict thing. But you get that. I suppose it's one of the advantages of being an expat. You can see the funny side for things that other people don't think are quite so funny. The trick, however, this is a bit of advice for any of you who might be considering being an expat at some stage. When you do see the funny side to things that people in your new country don't find funny, it's probably best to keep it to yourself. They're probably not going to appreciate having you tell them that something that they don't think is funny actually is. Okay? But speaking of this Australia-New Zealand thing, this isn't about the rivalry quite so much, but it's something that New Zealanders will find annoying. And actually, I do too, to be honest. You might remember at the end of March, there was Earth Hour, where people were asked to switch off basically all the power for an hour. Power for an hour, that rhymes. Anyway, it was covered in the news worldwide. And there was a story by AP that was it was posted on Yahoo News and probably other places. And it started out talking about how New Zealand and Fiji were the first places in the world to take part, and they were turning off their lights, blah, 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 blah. Great. Well, then the next day, I was watching the American evening news. I don't remember if it was ABC or CBS. Doesn't matter. And what do you think they talked about? They talked about the Sydney Opera House lights going black. It's as if nothing exists until you get to Australia. Now, for a New Zealander, and probably Pacific Islanders as well, that is really annoying because there's a lot of people who don't live in Australia and certainly don't live in Sydney. But it's just that Sydney is probably, well, obviously with the Opera House, which is their main focus, it's really recognizable. But it also is probably the only place in this part of the world that most Americans have ever heard of. So I can understand why they do it. And this story isn't necessarily the best example of this. It's just the kind of thing that always happens where the news media will focus on something going on in Sydney when it may have already happened in other countries like 2 hours earlier. Okay, and now I'm going to switch gears. I'm going to talk about a couple things that were in the news, mostly because I thought they were kind of funny. Now, the first, actually, I saw today on Yahoo News, and again, it's an AP story, but it was talking about how an 11-year-old Michigan boy had found a mistake in the Smithsonian Institution that had been there since 1981. And I always think it's funny when a kid points out the mistakes of errors of their adults anyway. But here's the thing. I'm just going to read the... lead sentence. Is fifth grader Kenton Stufflebeam smarter than the Smithsonian? Kenton Stufflebeam. Now, how's that for a name? I shouldn't laugh at his name. But the first thing I thought of when I heard that is that like it sounded like it was a character that should be on Sesame Street. Like should walk around going, "Hello, bird," or something like that. And if you don't get that reference, then you're probably too old. Actually, I'm too old to know that, but I do anyway. But it's actually an interesting story if you do happen to run across it. I'm not going to put a link in the show notes because they can't be bothered. But essentially what it is there was a sign at the Smithsonian that described the Precambrian as an era, when in fact it is not. I actually didn't know. I actually wouldn't have known that myself. But anyway. But there was another story, and this was at the end of March. As I said, I've had some things piling up that I wanted to tell you about. And this is a real story. And I'm going to read the entire thing to you. It's not that long, just because I think it's hilarious. I hope you do too. Headline: New Zealand man sentenced after claiming to have been raped by a wombat. A New Zealand man who claimed to have been left speaking Australian after being raped by a wombat has been sentenced to 75 hours community work for his trouble. Then he gives his name. He's a 48-year-old orchard worker. Admitted in the Nelson District Court yesterday to the charge of using a phone for a fictitious purpose after calling police with the message, "I've been raped by a wombat." Police prosecutor Sergeant Chris Stringer told the court that on the afternoon of February 11th, this man called the police communications center threatening to smash the filth if they arrived at his home that night. When asked if he had an emergency, he replied, yes. On a second subsequent call to the communications center, this man told the police he was being raped by a wombat at his Motueka address and sought their immediate help. He called police again soon after and gave his full name, saying he wanted to withdraw the complaint. "I'll retract the rape complaint from the wombat because he's pulled out," this man told the operator at the communication center, who had no idea what he was talking about. "Apart from speaking Australian now, I'm pretty all right, you know. I didn't hurt my bum at all," this man told the operator. The policeman said that alcohol had played a part in the man's life. However, the defense lawyer said that alcohol was not a problem on the day. The judge said he was not quite sure what motivated the man to make those statements to the police, but in sentencing, he warned the man not to do it again. I would think not. Now, obviously, rape is not a funny subject. However, what on earth would make somebody ring the police and say he was that he was being raped by a wombat, which is an Australian animal, by the way? It is not in New Zealand, but it's just bizarre. Anyway, I thought that was one of the funniest things I had read in a long time. And if I had read it on the 1st of April, I certainly wouldn't have thought it was true. But anyway. But in world news, you've probably seen this on the news yourself by now, but I was fascinated by this, partly, I suppose, being a podcaster and all. But in France, some scientists had, I don't know if the scientists were in France, but the anyway, the some scientists had found a way of playing the world's oldest recording. It was done in France in 1860, which makes it 17 years older than the first recording by Thomas Edison, you know, the Mary Had a Little Lamb thing. And apparently what they had done is they'd used graphite and paper, I think it is, to somehow record voices. But as I understand it, they hadn't invented any way to play it back, which is a bit silly if you stop and think about it. And this thing has been sitting around for a very long time, and nobody has dared to play it because they didn't want to wreck it, obviously. And the scientists managed to scan it with some sort of high-tech scan and then come up with a virtual stylus to play it. And so the first time since 1860 or thereabouts, the voice that was recorded was heard, which is really pretty phenomenal if you stop to think about it. I mean, how long ago that was. Now, as far as nobody knows for sure if there are any other recordings around yet, obviously, because we may still discover some more. But as it stands right now, this is the oldest known recording. Now, nobody's suggesting that there aren't any older recordings, ones that are even, you know, go back even further. But this is the oldest recording that still exists, that they know of. And so I think that's really pretty remarkable. Now, as it happens, there was a link. There is actually an audio file that was on the BBC website. And being a curious sort, of course, I downloaded it. And I decided I wanted to have it here. So I thought I might share that with you, if you don't mind. And I will play that now. Okay, I'm going to try that again. I'm just going to try to turn up the gain a little bit to see if I can make it a bit louder. No, I just can't make anything out of that. Oh, well, I just thought it'd be interesting to give it a go and see how we see what we make of it. But that is actually it for the topics today. And now I'm going to go on to the comments. First, I'm going to jump back to episode 80 because I never got a chance to go over those comments. And first was Roger Green, who said, "Don't know why, but when I get your podcast on iTunes, it takes considerably longer than another podcast of similar length. Coverville. In fact, the download for number 80 failed the first time altogether, though it worked on attempt number 2. And I said, I think that Podomatic, my podcast host, may have been having issues. That episode took forever for me to upload, too. Hopefully, it will be sorted soon." And at the beginning of the show notes, I said it took 4 hours to upload the episode. And that was with repeated attempts, but more about that in a second. The next comment was Eric from Confessions of a Southern Boy in Yankee Land, who said, "Ah, Hillsong. I know it well, having grown up in the AFG," which I churlishly referred to as Ass of God, but that's just me. And I said, actually, I figured you'd know about Hillsong. I'm sorry for you. I just find their music really smarmy, but anyway. And next was Archer, who said, happy fall. That's great that you got to try the Viognier, and glad you enjoyed it. We have some great ones in Virginia. I wonder if they taste similar. Enjoy the four-day weekend. Oh, and like Roger, your podcast takes a long time to download, but I get the whole thing. And I said, I haven't had time to get any more Viognier, but I'm keen to try it again. And actually, Archer had said before he wanted photos of fall leaves. And I should have mentioned this when I was talking about the two countries. There's no such thing as fall leaves in New Zealand because all of the native plants are evergreen. The only trees that lose their leaves are the exotics imported from Europe, oaks and maples and whatever else. The native trees never lose their leaves, so it's green year-round, at least in this part of the country. I don't know about... I suppose it's the same in other parts. I actually don't know, come to think of it, because I don't go to the places where they have snow. I hate snow. Well, actually, I like looking at it. I just don't like being in it. Yes, so anyway. And next up was Calvin, who said, I usually try uploading using the FTP method, and it works much better for me. I suppose Spotomatic does have its downsides. Now that I've pushed you to the limit, it doesn't seem like so much fun to make you say dirty things anymore. I think it's funny about the portable spa. I can't imagine filling up something like that on a regular basis, or was it a one-time deal? And I said, I usually use FTP too, because it's usually faster. This time it wasn't. The web upload wouldn't work at all. We set up the spa and used it like a permanent one to see if a more expensive permanent one would get any use. The portable one did, so we got a permanent one. And about the Podomatic thing, I did start using FTP software to upload my episodes instead of the web system you can use because sometimes it wouldn't connect or it would just take forever, and the FTP seemed to work much better. It's still a bit buggy sometimes, though, and on episode 80 was a time when it was especially buggy. I think it was right after that they upgraded their servers. I can't remember exactly. And I had other problems after that. But as I talked about in the anniversary episode. But at that point, it was taking forever to upload things. As far as the spa goes, the spa was a temporary one, and Nigel's brother has it now. But got enough use out of it. I mean, I only went in it once, but we got enough use out of it, or Nigel did, I should say, that he was willing to go ahead and get a permanent one. And we still are using that, and he's responsible for maintaining it because he's the one who really wanted it. And I've been in that one a few times. I think it did help my back a bit because, as you may remember, ironically enough, I pulled my back when I was helping the delivery guy deliver the spa, and I think soaking in the water with the jet on my back probably helped it a bit, because now it's actually pretty much fine, but it actually bothered me for the better part of 2 weeks, I'd say. But now I'm going on to episode 81, which is my last episode, my first podiversary. And first up was Roger Green, who said, Hi, Arthur, I thought you should know. I tried to get your podcast from iTunes, per usual. It was on the menu. The little wheel spun around for the longest time, and then I ended up with an exclamation point in the left column. I've experienced this before, so I tried it again, and with the same result. Fortunately, I could access it by clicking the play button at amarinspodomatic.com. And I said, it didn't used to be this bad, Roger, and it's clear to me that I'm going to have to change hosts to fix it. I downloaded through iTunes and got 15 minutes and 26 seconds, about half the episode. It also took forever. Then re-download is an acceptably long time too. Arg! At the time, I was trying to download again. Hang in there, because I'm working on to fix this permanently. In the meantime, you should be able to get any episode manually through iTunes or by clicking the download button on the Podomatic page. I'll do a how-to post on this blog later today, but I'm pretty fed up with all the hassles Podomatic is causing me. And as it happens, when that download, which said it was going to take something like 45 minutes or something, when it was done, I got, I lost my piece of paper. It was like 4 minutes and 10 seconds or something. So I had to download it yet again. And I'm going to tell you what I did in case you ever find yourself in a similar situation. I just had this happen today, actually, with the latest episode from Terminally Single, where I only got half the podcast. And I had to do the same thing, which is I go to the iTunes store and I search for whatever the podcast is, like Amron's podcast, for instance. I go to the, I have an episode of a podcast and I know it's incomplete. First thing I do is I right click on it and delete it. And it says, do you want to move it to the trash? You say yes. Then I go to the iTunes store and search for whatever podcast I want, like Amron's podcast, for instance. Go to the list of podcasts, go to the episode that I'm missing or that's incomplete, and click on Get Episode. And it will download it and put it in the correct folder. The reason I go through all of this rigmarole is to make sure that it stays sorted correctly in iTunes. If that didn't matter, I could just, you know, go to the website and download it manually, which is always an option. On my show notes on my blog, amrons.com, there is always a button that says right-click here to download or something. That is a link directly back to Podomatic, and you should always be able to do that. If that fails, you can go to the Podomatic site itself, and if you push the play button, there's one of the options is to download, and you can try that. But that won't put it in iTunes, which is why I recommend the roundabout way through iTunes. And that will work for any podcast or anything else. Well, it's supposed to just be podcasts. If you have one that's incomplete, just delete it, then go to the iTunes store and do Get Episode for whatever episode you've got that's incomplete. I do think that a lot of these problems are specific to Podomatic, because Terminally Single is also hosted by Podomatic. If I had it to do over again, I would not choose Podomatic. It's flat out, I would not choose Podomatic. However, I have a big issue ahead of me, because my podcast right now is listed on iTunes and the feed comes from Podomatic. I cannot change that feed. It's not possible. They won't do it. I have no access to the feed, so I can't do it. They refuse to do it, basically. So they're holding my content hostage. Now, I've got 28 reviews on iTunes at the moment. And I'm listed on all sorts of aggregators and list sites all over the world, literally. If I go and change my host, I have to make I've got to go back to all of these other places and make sure that if it's possible that I change my feed address to point it in the right direction. Otherwise, it's going to miss out. And I've been gaining slowly. I've been gaining more listeners over time. And quite frankly, I don't want to do anything that's going to make it harder for people to find the podcast. So what I'm thinking at the moment is that I'm going to leave things as they are, but I'm going to set up a second account somewhere else where I'm going to start uploading my older episodes. And eventually, it may very well end up being that I cross-post, that I put them on both services, so that if I eventually want to switch completely over to the new service, I'll be able to do it and everything will already be there. I don't know if I'm going to go down that road, to be honest. I suppose if my listenership falls off, I might just go ahead and do it. It kind of depends on what happens with Podomatic over the next few months. If the service continues to deteriorate, I'm not going to have any choice but to just bite the bullet and switch. But by putting it off for a little while, this gives me the chance to get all of my episodes moved over to whatever this new host is, probably Libsyn, in a slow and orderly fashion. And it means that I can just do basically turn off the lights on one and turn the lights on the other is what it amounts to. But I will keep you posted about any changes I make. And do let me know if you continue to have problems with downloading. Not all of the problems I'm having are with Podomatic. I've tried downloading some that I know are hosted on Libsyn, and they've taken a very long time as well when the episodes are no longer than any of mine. So I think a lot of it depends on the host. It depends on the various connections you've got, what kind of broadband service you've got, and all kinds of other factors that are beyond the control of anybody. But do let me know if you do have any problems downloading episodes, or if it continues to take a long time, because that may sort of hurry me up to make a switch. But I do, if at all possible, I want to put it off, hopefully permanently, but at least for as long as possible, to give me a chance to manage the move rather than just do it in a hurry. When Eric from Confessions of a Southern Boy in Yankeeland switched to his new feed, there were consequences. It took him a while to get back onto the featured page in iTunes and all sorts of things like that. But his podcast was still relatively new at the time. Mine is obviously over a year old now, and there are 82 episodes that I have to take into consideration. It annoys the hell out of me that Podomatic is holding my content hostage, but there's really nothing I can do about that. So I'll try to come up with a long-term solution, but in the meantime, just do let me know if you run across any problems. But anyway, moving back to comments. Next up was, it says Brian and Jim, but it's actually Brian from My Gay Two Cents in Rochester, New York. One of my favorite podcasts. Do give it a listen. He says, "Hi, Arthur. I could kick myself. I forgot to call and wish you congrats. Sorry, but I'm saying it now. Love the show. Hope to talk to you on Skype someday." And I said, gotta scroll down, sorry. I said, "Thanks. Don't worry about not calling. I don't always remember to do it for podcasters either, so it's really no big deal. We should record together sometime, and I actually think that would be fun, and I hope to record with a variety of podcasters in the weeks and months ahead, sometimes for my show, sometimes for theirs, because I think it's interesting when people who don't really know each other that well talk. And, of course, podcasters are used to talking to a microphone, so it's not that big a drama for them. For us, I suppose. I should include me in that. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But certainly you'll be seeing more guests popping up on my podcast, and some of them will be other podcasters and some won't. Next up was Nick from Auckland, who said, "Congrats on the big anniversary. A year in blogging is like 10 in the real world." And I said, "Thanks. So true, though 10 years seems a little short." Believe me, it does. It's hard to believe that it's only been a year that I've been podcasting. It feels like a lot longer, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, it just feels like it's been a long time. And same with my blog. It seems much longer than it's actually been, which is about a year and a half, I think. And next up was Calvin, who said, "Congratulations, Arthur. I can't believe I didn't notice that it was your podiversary or remember. I feel so ashamed." And I said, "Thanks, but nothing to be ashamed of. I'm just glad you still listen." And I am, because I really like Calvin, and I like Calvin's podcast a lot. Actually, a few episodes back, I don't think I mentioned this, on his podcast, he was talking about my problems, and he said that he found that if you delete the media file associated with an episode, that people could still download it, but it got it off of your total or whatever. Now, I don't know if that's a fluke on Podomatic, if it's a mistake or what, but I tried it, and it works. I deleted a whole bunch of old media files, and to free up room, I had to, because I was actually over the limit. And so I did that, and then I was able to carry on uploading, and people can still download those old episodes. Now, unfortunately, I didn't find out about that till I'd already deleted, I think it was 5 episodes. So those are gone. I mean, I still have them, but they're gone from the feed. But there was a very useful hint that I got from Calvin. And next up was Archer, who said, "Congratulations on your 100th show. I haven't had any issues downloading your podcast on iTunes. I hope whatever you decide about your contacts with and LASIK, that it goes well. I just read your blog and see that you are going to do it, so good luck. You could feel the love in all those messages you got." And then after that was Archer, who said, "100th show? Damn, I meant 1 year of podcasting. CRS, you know." And I said, "Archer 1 and 2, thanks, and thanks for the message. I'm not one to criticize others over CRS, glass houses and stones, don't you know? You're right about the messages, and the feeling is mutual." I did say on the blog that I was evaluated for the LASIK, and it turns out that I should expect very good or excellent vision results, they say. And I have talked about this in the blog, but I realize that most of you don't read the blog, which is fine. The procedure was about 2 hours. The examination was about 2 hours, because they did all sorts of measurements and, you know, the usual visual thing, like, which is better, number one or number two? That, and plus doing all kinds of measurements with my eyes. I had to look in this thing that had these concentric black and white circles, reminding me a bit of the time tunnel from TV. I had to stare into that, and another one I had to stare at a red dot by Mount Fuji, which probably tells you where the thing must have been made. But they measured all kinds of things, my cornea, and they looked at, well, they also examined my retina and the pressure in my eyes to make sure that was all, that they were healthy, which they are. But the eye doctor was a bit concerned about what condition my corneas would be in, because I've been wearing contact lenses for something like 27 years, I think. And so he thought they might be a bit wonky. Well, it turns out they're not. They're fine. And I attribute that, among other things, to the fact that I've been absolutely obsessive about proper contact handling procedures. And in all those 27 years, I've never had an eye infection or any other problem, unlike a lot of the contact lens wearers I've known. He also said that as you get older, your corneas become harder and stiffer, which makes them better for the procedures. When you're, say, around 20, they're still a bit too pliable, and it's not as successful as when it's the closer you get to 50, the better. And which tells us two things. First of all, that it's good to be hard. And secondly, that there are some advantages to getting older. I mean, I knew there had to be at least one advantage to getting older. But those are such obvious jokes, I know. But anyway, apparently once you're somewhere around 50, like between 40, 50, somewhere in there, the procedure tends to be much more successful, which actually surprised me. However, there is still age-related vision decline, presbyopia. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. And essentially, it means that you have trouble focusing on things that are very close or that are small. So I will probably need reading glasses, which is fine because, I mean, as it is right now, sometimes I use a magnifying glass to see small type up close. And he said that around age 60, is roughly around there somewhere, is when the vision stabilizes. And around age 60, I may need glasses for near vision, like a computer screen, for instance. But we'll see. I mean, who knows? It may not happen. But I go in on May 8th, and they do the LASIK procedure, which is all done with lasers, no blades or anything. And within 12 hours, the little flap over your cornea is healed, which astounded me. And you get checked that day, you get checked the next day, you get checked in a week, and then I think it's 2 weeks, and then a month or something like that. Anyway, for quite a while, and that's all included in the price, which is quite steep. And pretty much in a month, they know where you're going to stay, pretty much. Technically, they tell you that it takes 3 months for your vision to stabilize wherever it's going to be, but they say in practical terms, it's usually about a month, and it doesn't change much after that. It's a fairly small amount. So it scares the shit out of me, the idea of getting this done, but I know that it'll be better in the long run because contacts are a hassle, and my vision is bad enough that glasses are an even worse hassle in many respects. So I think it's going to be good. So the next commenter was Wes from Live It Up podcast, which is a new podcast, and it's also one of my favorites. I'm sure it's on my Parade of Podcast. Okay, I'll scroll down. I'm sure it is on my Parade of Podcast. Yes, it is. Do check it out. I was just distracted on the blog for a second. It is a new podcast, and it is one of my favorites. And I do check it out because I really enjoy it. And so Wes said, I'm a little behind, but being in America, we're inherently behind New Zealand. But a big congratulations on 100 episodes. And the next up again was Wes, who said, damn that Archer. His review was the last one, and I got 100 stuck in my head. Damn his CRS. Anyway, happy 1 year. And I said, thanks. It looks like CRS may be contagious. Oh, yeah, that's what I was looking at, because I thought I spelled contagious wrong. Anyway, hopefully it isn't contagious, but you just never know, do you? But thanks for that, Wes. And now I'm going over to the Podomatic site, where I'm just waiting for it to load. There was a comment over there, and it is from Auntie Vera Charles, who said, so sorry I'm late with this, lovey, but I'm behind in listening to my podcast list. Congratulations on your 1 year. May I go so long. Really enjoy your show and your terrific voice. Kisses, Vera. And I said, thank you so much, Auntie. Coming from you, that means a lot. I'm sure you'll be podcasting for a long time to come. I sure hope so, anyway. And Auntie's podcast is called Auntie Vera Charles Speaks for Real. And it's really pretty amazing. And that was actually one of the things I was thinking of in my head when I was talking on my anniversary show about how I decided not to do anything special, because the 100th episode of Auntie Vera Charles Speaks for Real was absolutely phenomenal. And I thought, there's no way in hell I can do anything as good as that. So I'm just gonna take a simpler road, which is actually essentially what Ramble Redhead did for his 200th episode. I think for much of the same reason as I did. But it's actually an amazing podcast, and do check it out. Episode 101 was also interesting to me because Vera talks a bit about identity and having not an assumed identity exactly, but the persona, I guess, you have as a podcaster and that you keep and present to the world and why you do that, those sorts of things. You know, I don't know if I have a link to Adivere Charles on my website. I don't. I will fix that. And Adivere Charles speaks for real. I quite like it, and check it out. I think you will enjoy it. And finally, from comments, I have an email. And this is from Frank. And Frank, I didn't ask you in advance if I could read this on the podcast, so I hope you won't be angry. But I just thought it was really sweet, so I wanted to share it. He says, "Hey, Arthur, it's hard to believe that it's been a year. Congratulations and many more. I really appreciate what you're doing. I totally agree that the Minister's Kids broadcast was great. Podcast of the Year material." Well, thank you for that, Frank. And thank you, for all of you, for your comments. And by all means, feel free to leave me a comment at any time on my blog, amarins.com. You can also ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. You can send an email to me at Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at amarins.com. Or you can still use the old amarins.com as well. I mean, that still exists. It's on my blog, of course. But that is it for this episode of the Amarins Podcast. I'll be back again next week with more. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.